Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast, and we are ready to sink our teeth into another brand new episode, a scamtastic episode. Maybe I should have come with a spoiler alert there as to what we're talking about, because it feels like while people are talking about the third wave of COVID, there's another third wave that's happening at the moment in the world of gaming, and it's the third wave of, I guess, console pre-orders that are coming out. So it seems like PlayStation 5 has, you know, got some more stock coming, and so the pre-orders come with it. And with that, increased stories about scammers. So scalpers and scammers and people who are basically trying to separate you from your hard-earned cash without providing you the goods and services that you so deserve. And so today we want to jump into talking about what exactly the whole scamming and scalping kind of pandemic, and I might be using that word lightly given the current 2021 context, but with me as always is Tim. How are you doing, sir? First and foremost, what have you been playing? What have you been up to?
Hey, G, how's it going? I'm good. Yeah, man, I've been quite busy. I've been playing a lot of online games, actually, as it so happens. Didn't used to for a long time, but I've been getting back into some Call of Duty, some Remnant from the Ashes, a new PS Plus game last month, bit of Borderlands 3, like a bit of Diablo 3 even, just like a big old mix match. And literally, like, I have a different friend group with like every game that I've been logging into, just mostly to like catch up with people who I haven't been able to spend time with or have moved overseas or in, you know, another city. And it's been great, you know, having that time with friends to play some games. But yeah, you can tell like that there's that this podcast topic, you know, came out of, you know, it's quite obvious that Tim doesn't have a PlayStation 5. Like, he's probably not going to get one for a while. But yeah, like, I wanted to unpack this and interrogate like why, you know, it's so difficult to get a PlayStation 5 at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. No, first of all, it's great what you're saying about like online gaming becoming more of a space to socialize than to actually play games. I think particularly with, you know, a lot of the games being, you know, I almost want to say hijacked as competitive esports, when at their heart, they're just, you know, games to play with your friends. So, you know, you mentioned, for example, Warzone, you know, might be considered an esport, but other games like Diablo, and you were telling the other day, you're playing Rocket League and all that, far more just about jamming with your mates. And it's almost like what used to be the catch up drinks after work has now become a couple of rounds of whatever game. And yeah, I totally hear you. I've been playing Fortnite of all things at the moment.
Oh, nice.
With a couple of friends who are not gamers in the least. And it's actually so great to just hang out and play casually and not worry about not getting top kill score and 100%. Yeah. Cool. So as we mentioned, the topic at the moment it's pretty timely, given how much particularly Sony has been in the news about people scalping consoles. You know, and for just a quick rundown of what scalping is, for those who don't know, Tim, you've got the Webster's or the Wikipedia definition there.
Yeah, so the word was first used to describe sort of buying up large quantities of tickets for things like gigs and festivals, and then selling those on at a markup, and then profiting off that and pocketing those profits.
Yeah,
it sort of started off as like a trading strategy for stonks and the like, and it's scalping is sort of like become a word now that's used for, you know, short trading, and more commonly for these types of trades that are happening for, you know, specific goods.
Yeah.
So like I can use an example of, you know, years ago I saw like all the big bands that I've ever seen in my life were on one weekend at one festival. It was Coachella. And you know, we were buying tickets. I think this was like 2014, 2015. We needed like five or six people in the room, each with a laptop, each with a phone, multiple phones, to try and get onto the servers and try and get something into the shopping cart once those ticket sales go live and get it out the door. Because look, if you don't have that, and if you're a one-man operation like the majority of, you know, the consumer base are, you're gonna find yourself up against a bit of a steep incline, because the scalpers are, you know, they're well resourced. They can mobilize en masse. They've got the resources and manpower that the general consumer doesn't. And the only way that we were able to actually get these tickets at the retail price was because we set up one of these operations.
Yeah.
And like, thank God we did, because a couple of hours later, all the tickets were sold out, and you then have to go to, let's say, a Craigslist or a Gumtree or, you know, an Amazon type vibe to get these resellers, or an eBay. Yeah. And looking at, you know, a markup of already like 100-150%. And that keeps on, you know, going up like towards the weekend as the good becomes rarer and rarer. And so what I find is a lot of these scalpers are using these same tactics and these same techniques with tech products and tech goods. Just, we saw it happen with the recent graphics cards that launched towards the end of last year. That became a huge thing. Not only were the scalpers using it to price gouge, but people also buying it up to set up their own servers with Bitcoin and
Bitcoin mining and all that.
Bitcoin mining. So, and you saw like the prices were just like skyrocketing. And this is what we're seeing now with the PlayStation 5, this rare mythical creature, you know, that we can only hope to get a glimpse of.
Yeah, I mean, has anyone ever actually touched a PS5? You know, we all seen pictures.
The guy with the PS5,
staring
right?
at my beauty right now. No, I did stroke it
lovingly last time I was there.
You do mention a couple of really salient points. The one is that I think whenever one talks about a scalper, you have this idea that it's this dude in a trench coat, you know, in an alley that's, you know, basically, you know, bootlegged. Alcohol sort of vibe, you know, that's how it is. But the fact is, a lot of these are professional, and I don't know if you can hear my air quotes, but like professional operations where they have a website, they might even have an office. It's just a case of going, they are seeing an item with, you know, clearly high demand and low stock because it's all in the news, and they then just buy up, whether they're using multiple accounts to buy up, you know, fake email addresses. I mean, how much information do you really need to provide to a supplier to be able to secure stock? I mean, hey, you make up a couple of email addresses, you do the others. I mean, heck, it could be the same email address. People probably don't even notice. So you buy a bunch as retail. Or, I mean, some of them might even apply for distributor licenses. So they are, you know, buying it at a wholesale price, or at least a distributor kind of markdown. Or they might be using their own legitimate business kind of distribution license to buy stock, and then using some of that stock to sell, you know, legitimately at the recommended retail price. And then the rest, they're going, hey, yeah, I could sell all 50 units at normal price, or I could sell 20 at normal price and then just start price gouging the other 30 because I know I'll sell them. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways around it. And I think it always comes out of that perfect storm of great PR providing the hype train, and then the stories leaking about like where the stock's going to be available. And I sometimes wonder how much of it is leaked is the wrong word, but like part of a narrative that developers, or at least kind of tech producers, actually release to create more of a hype. Because let's be honest, if it were a case of going, don't worry, there will be millions and millions of consoles, it's not that prestigious to get one, it's not that big a deal, then people wouldn't be as excited. It's definitely a case, yeah. I think back to days when, you know, a game would come out and there were no pre-orders. It's like it would launch and you'd go to a shop, and sometimes you go to the first shop and they wouldn't have you go to the next one. And, oh, there's one in the back. I'm seeing scenes of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Jingle All the Way, you know, trying to get like the last Turbo Man doll, and you know, it's exactly that. Whereas when you realize that, okay, there are millions of copies, like it's not a big deal, I guess I'll pick one up. months from now when people get over it and they start trying to clear stock. So yeah, I'm not trying to say this is something that's been constructed. There was definitely a shortage, but it is something that certainly benefits the constructors of the consoles, that there is a demand created out of kind of a fear of missing out. You know, yeah, FOMO is a big seller.
It's true. There definitely is. And I think you touched on a really important point that there is a target on the backs of scalpers at the moment, scalpers and scammers coming out of the PS5 launch. And that is because there's just a general, like, greater interest in it, because this seems to be the experience that a lot of people are encountering when they are trying to go and purchase a PS5. You know, you'll get to the pre-order phase. Pre-orders are most likely out, like there just aren't any. So then you'll end up defaulting to the private third-party sellers market, you know, places like Facebook and Gumtree and Marketplace. And by people funneling through there, like, that's where they're having their experience when they're trying to engage with Sony on this product launch.
Yeah.
And I think, like, this is all feeding into the narrative of the day that is, I feel, is changing sentiment towards the brand of Sony, but also the launch itself and the product. I mean, like, this could have, you know, general impacts on the, like, national uptake of this tech.
Yeah. It's such a fine line, actually, between having a limited edition product that very few people can get, and it comes out in waves, kind of drops, and people get their hands on it, versus people just getting over it. You know, it's a case of going, cool, you've built up this hype. I can't get hold of the product. If my nearest competitor, call it Xbox, call it Nintendo, has a relatively similar product, you know, let's not get into console wars about better or worse, whatever, just a relatively similar product, and you want it that bad, one of two things happen. Either you get over it, the hype of buying it now, and then you end up buying it later, or you just get over it so much that you just buy a different product. That you just go, well, if I can't get a PlayStation, I really want a PlayStation, I can't get one, but every time I go to the store, there's plenty of Xboxes, then, well, screw it, I'm going to buy an Xbox. So it really is that fine line between the desire that comes from limited edition and, you know, give customers what they want when they want it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the basket that I find myself in at the moment, where, you know, when the console was launched, my hype was really high, and as, like, the picture became clearer that, no, this is something you actually can't have and you're not going to get.
Yeah.
You know, my, like, at least in the immediate future, like on first or second pre-orders, you know, that hype starts descaling down to a level of, well, okay, maybe I'll wait, you know, a year until Sony have released, like, a pro version of the console, or there are more games on the platform. Basically, I'm self-bargaining now to work out, like,
to heal the hurt.
When will be a good time to purchase? Like, 100%. But I'm still very much on the fence of, I'm going to buy a PlayStation 5, just not now.
Yeah.
But, you know, when that starts compounding, like, over, like, a long period of time, that sentiment is now changing to, well, you know what? PlayStation 5 is probably not that great.
You know, I'm living without
like, it can't be that. I'm living without fine. It can't be that much better than, like, you know, an Xbox. And like, I'm, like, definitely leaning more towards, like, the narrative that, you know, Xbox Game Pass seems to be, like, the better value for money, 100%. Something that's actually attainable in the immediate future. And then it's like a wait and see what happens with Sony later on.
Yeah. Another thing, you know, we're talking about this perfect storm of low stocks and, you know, the hype that's created kind of creates this perfect bubble for a scalper to go, you know, if there are hundreds of products to go after, whether it's the latest iPhones or TVs or whatever, but, you know, picking the PlayStation 5, I think what made it worse was this all happened during lockdown, coming out of the part of lockdown when there was the difference between essential and non-essential goods for sale, where people would be stuck at home and the only thing you could buy at a shop would be essential goods. I mean, I remember going to stores where they would sell groceries and, say, for example, cosmetics. And you'd be like, no, you can't buy shampoo because shampoo is somehow like going to destroy the economy, and they're all going to give us COVID. So it's like, okay, cool. Well, I guess I will just wash with the sunlight liquid that is barely essential. You know, it's like dishwashing liquid or whatever. And so it was weird to be able to go to a store and have entire shelves just like, you know, duct taped closed or whatever. It felt like, you know, buying alcohol on a Sunday type thing where certain aisles are just not allowed. And so, you know, electronics like the PlayStation 4 even was deemed a non-essential good. And so what happened is you almost already started having these on the sly scalping where people are going, hey, you can't buy a PlayStation 4 legitimately through any shop, but you can buy it from me. So people are selling secondhand PS4s at new prices. They are selling like new ones at 50% to 100% markups just because they know there's demand. People want a console because they're stuck at home, but they can't buy it legitimately. So yeah, it really, that definitely fed into this PS5 kind of launch. And maybe some of it, like you were saying, is people thinking they'd get PS5s, realizing that stock was so limited that they're like, okay, screw it, I'll get a PS4 then now until there's a price reduction. But even that was scalper season, you know? So
Yeah. So, you know, and so I just want to quickly like look at the general prices that PS5s are going for at the moment.
Yeah.
And like the benchmark sort of retail price for, let's say, the standard disc version console, one controller bundle is around $12,999.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of it's a hefty price to begin with. It's you know, it's a price point that like not a lot of people can easily get onto. But what you're finding now, the only consoles that are available through third-party sellers would be through, let's say, Gumtree. I saw one. Here's one going for $18,000. There's another for $17,000. All disc versions ranging between $16,000 and $19,000. And here's a bundle for like $21,000. So like people are really, you know, going for it. And like they rely heavily on scarcity of the product.
Of course.
Having those pre-orders gone basically removes an avenue of purchase or sale for the consumer. So when the consumer's going to your general retail outlets, they just hit a brick wall and get diverted somewhere else if it's still an avenue that they want to pursue. You know, BT Games out of stock, Take Lots out of stock, Game out of stock. And the big thing, you know, the big issue here is that traditional retailers would never be allowed to mark up
a
product as much as these scalpers do.
Yeah, and I think part of that with a little bit of insight, having worked in the space, is that they're playing by the rules. They are given what do you call it? Like a recommended selling price. And so they're given the list price and they know how much margin they're allowed to make. You know, sometimes there's a range, but generally they try and stay price competitive to everyone else. It's the same reason why they don't take massive price reductions, because they know that that puts such a cat among the pigeons in terms of the retail selling price of a product. If suddenly one of the retailers decides to drop the price by R1,000 on everyone else, because then they're all going, hey, Sony South Africa, whatever, there isn't such a thing, but like the distributor here, they go, we're playing by the rules, but XYZ has dropped theirs by R1,000. Like, this is not playing fair. And it ends up having like relationship impact where the distributors then, you know, if it gets to the point where someone's really just not playing by the rules, whether too expensive or too cheap or whatever, they fall out of tier one status, which is then how many consoles or games they're allocated, access to, you know, incentive DLCs and all that sort of stuff. So generally that helps toe the line. Obviously, they're not allowed to tell them what price to sell because that's price fixing and obviously getting a lot of trouble for that. You can sell it for whatever you want. If you want to make a loss, if you want to make massive profits, that's up to you. But at the end of the day, they control that relationship through giving perks and rebates and that to their top retailers and part of that is what they call price consistency and all that, price accuracy. So it is important that the reason this is happening is that, you know, the big guys are playing by the rules and they're selling only the stock they have, and those that aren't are kind of like going away with things. I mean, I want to play devil's advocate for just a second, and you know, we're just making this assumption that like scalping's a problem, like it's bad and we shouldn't do it, but like, is it really? And I've got my own personal feelings, but you know, it's not illegal in South Africa. Mm. you know, and this might be a way of like scalpers making sure they can sleep at night, but you know, they will rationalize their profits, you know, under the idea of it's entrepreneurship. I found a gap. I saw something that was going to have demand. I'm putting my cash at risk to buy the product and then I'm selling it. Look, it's much worse if they're allowed to buy the stuff on credit and then sell it at a marked up version, you know, at a price and then just pay back the credit. But let's assume everything's, they've at least risked their 12,000 Rand per console. And so they're sitting with a kind of a capital, kind of working capital issue of going, I've got stock that is worth 120,000 Rand and I'm trying to make a profit on it. But, you know, that's, I think that is really just a, like I said, devil's advocate trying to sleep well at night kind of argument. At the end of the day, for the consumer, scalping is bad. But how do you get to the point, because it's a balancing act between letting people do whatever they want and price fixing. We're going, this product is only allowed to be sold for X, and if it's not, then, you know, you get the law involved. Because, you know, we've seen in the past multiple different ways where price fixing might look like it protects the consumer, but if there's enough, you know, collusion and collaboration between retailers, they can actually over time hike the price extraordinarily.
Yeah.
You know, we saw that with bread in this country. We've seen in the construction industry where there's like almost take turns in terms of who's the cheapest. So they make lots of money and get lots of sales, and then now it's your turn. Now it's your turn. And so we all get a chance to like take a bite of the pie. But at the end of the day, the consumer loses because they slowly just start agreeing to ratchet up the price.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like when I was doing a bit of research for this pod, looking at like interviews with other scalpers, you know, some of them have employees. So they're running, they technically think of it as like, you know, we're running a business and I got people to pay, you know, I need to pay my overheads, you know, and this is how I've decided to do this.
Rent in the back of a dark alley is not as cheap as people think, you know. And those trench coats don't pay for themselves. Like,
exactly. And, you know, there's you could say that, you know, retail is getting paid regardless because the scalpers are the ones buying the products and not and not the consumers, which then, you know, they might argue would incentivize like more stock coming to the region because like BT Games go, hey, we're sold out, give us some more. But the problem is that, you know, scalpers will argue that they're, you know, basically buying wholesale, right? But they're not buying at the wholesale price. They're buying at the retail price. And then it's generally, the consumer that has to take on the burden of that markup. And not just the burden of the markup. There's a lot more that goes into it. Like for consumer safety, for instance, like, you know, stepping outside of traditional sellers, you're risking your own warranty, your own guarantee issues. You're going to have to go straight back to the manufacturer. Got to email up Sony if you've got problems with that. With that console that you bought, and then just general safety for consumers, particularly in South Africa, we've seen a lot of like crime around PS5s as well.
Trucks getting hijacked, stores getting broken into, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you know, empty boxes being delivered to people. So it's, I would say that it's seeping out into and playing out in a lot of different ways that is generally disadvantaging the consumer, not just in, you know, on their pocket, but also in terms of their own rights to fair trade.
Yeah, safety is a big issue. I mean, not only like I'm imagining a sales situation where you go and buy, you know, your PlayStation 5 in cash, you know, say you get a good deal, 15,000 Rand, and you go to Sammy the scalper.
What a steal.
Yeah, exactly. Quite a steal. And you go to that alley and you make the purchase. First of all, no paperwork. There's no invoice for you to like prove that you purchased this. And then that starts getting sort of insurance issues because how did you come about this? Was it stolen? Is it stolen goods? And so if it's tracked down by the police, then, you know, suddenly you're buying stolen goods and that's illegal as well. So there's that avenue. Then, of course, it's like if it's even a real console, you know, you come home and it's just a perfectly weighted bunch of bricks. Then the other thing of like, you know, your cash gets stolen on the way, your console gets stolen on the way home. There's so many like risky spaces here. And in a weird way, I don't know if tech is a little bit different to some products, but it does feel like there are certain things that you buy and you would actually flex at how expensive it is. Like, oh my word, this pair of shoes, they only made 100. I paid 500,000 Rand for them. And you're going, wow, what a flex. Whereas here you're going, this PlayStation 5 console, they only got 100 in the country. I paid 20,000 Rand. You think you're flexing, but you look like an idiot. Like, you should have just filled out that pre-order form. Come on, man. You know, it's not a flex to get ripped off. Exactly. So yeah, there's a very weird space in the tech environment, I think, personally. It's weird. The flex is when you can get it for cheap. It's like, I got a deal, a guy who got this console for me for 10 grand, not like...
When it comes to tech, it's all about the deals, man. You can't be paying more than that shit's worth.
Exactly.
But I think another thing to look at would be, let's say, the impacts on Sony. Mm. And Sony have come out with their own responses to this, these scalpers.
Yeah.
But I wonder if their response is coming from a space of, yo, this is a problem, it's hurting us, or if it's coming from a space of, well, you know, we've got this manufactured scarcity through the media cycle, and, you know, adding it and keeping a light shone on it, you know, will make sure that this product remains a scarce good for, you know, pre-orders to come.
Yeah, 100%. I think the main issue is always going to be accuracy of data. Because at the end of the day, they sell a console, and I mean, the numbers we saw, they sold 213,000 PS5 consoles in its first month, and it's broke all its previous records, so well done to them. And part of that is the PR and the hype and all that sort of stuff happening, and maybe people stuck at home wanting, you know, something new to entertain themselves. And they're saying that scalpers made $28 million in next-gen console profits through eBay alone. So that's eBay alone. That's not private. That's people using their own, you know, networks or Gumtrees, whatever. That's just eBay, and that's both next-gen consoles. So let's halve it. Let's say it's half PlayStation and half Xbox Series X. So you've got $14 million. That still doesn't hurt Sony, because they go, those consoles were still sold. We still sold the consoles. We made the money via our retail or wholesale distributors. We made the cash. The problem is in the next phase. For one, you now are using inaccurate data in terms of how many consoles are active in households. You know, obviously, they'll link that to things like how many PSN accounts are there, because, you know, there's obviously going to be a ratio between people who have consoles and PSN accounts, people who play offline, if that's even possible anymore, I don't know. Or you play without an actual PSN account, you play online, but you don't open up an account, you play as a guest, as it were. There must obviously be a small amount of people who do that. And then they're also going to go through to how many games are sold. And I suppose the one impact is you're going, there will be a lot of consoles that are potentially just sitting around as stock. You know, they've been bought and paid for, but they're sitting in Sammy Scalper's, you know, little warehouse or in his backyard or whatever, just, you know, not being plugged in and not providing accurate data. But the other thing is, when they sold at 20,000 Rand instead of 12, arguably that's 8,000 Rand the person doesn't have to buy games. Yeah. You know, let's assume that the same budgets are used, you know, that's my gaming budget. And now I bought this game and now I don't have as much money to buy controllers and subscriptions to PSN Plus and other games. So the impact is less on the immediate console sales. They must be happy with how many consoles they sold. In fact, they probably are concerned that if they had more consoles available, they would have sold more. You know, so it's less about the scalping and far more about the shortage supply. Of supply. But I think the impact is going to be felt going forward in terms of how accurate is the data and how much money do people have to still buy games?
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, the story is similar in some ways to the PS3 launch in that, you know, slightly different in that the PS3 launched like was just like outside of the budget for a lot of people who wanted to upgrade from PS2 to PS3, ended up defaulting to, you know, to the Xbox 360. And that had a huge impact on Sony's bottom line, on the direction that they took with PS4. And I think it was arguably like why they decided on the price point for PS4, like what it was.
Yeah.
They were like, we need to make gaming cheaper, make it, you know, like a casual gift you can get someone for Christmas, like, you know, make it something that families can buy into easily. But by, you know, with this kind of imagined yardstick, that is being placed by scalpers, not necessarily by Sony, which the narrative is changing. Less people are taking up the console, and a large percentage of the consoles that have been bought sitting in storage. And you'll see like a slow software attachment rate is kind of what they refer to it as, which will just give back bad data on the health ratio that the console has in its, you know, first few years of launch.
Yeah, 100%. And that obviously is then exacerbated by Microsoft having, I won't say ample, but definitely fewer stock constraints than Sony's had, but also offering something like Game Pass, where you go, cool, this 12,000 Rand price point might be a little bit bigger than most people can afford. If you look at previous consoles peaking at like the between 5,000 and 7,000 Rand in the past, and, you know, put inflation into that or whatever, but like that was the, they were definitely well below the 10,000 Rand price point. That was like, this is, like you say, the kind of thing that a family could buy into once every 5 years as a tech outlay for entertainment of the family. 12,999, so it's 13,000 Rand, is considerably higher. It's like a 100% price jump. And then if you add on top of that, that most games for Sony are between 1,100 and 1,300 Rand, whereas with Games Pass, yeah, some games you can't get on Games Pass, but a lot of the big ones you can. For what, 100 Rand a month? What is the premium? It's like 110 or something Rand a month. Mm-hmm. So you're going, you know, I could buy a 12-month subscription, and I'm sure there are all sorts of discounts when you do that, and it costs as much as one game, which, let's be honest, how many games after you've played them are you still playing a year later anyway? So it really is a tough situation. I know we can't blame it all on scalpers and scammers, but it does certainly end up hurting not only the consumer but PlayStation in the long run. But let's see how the story pans out as the third wave starts hitting us now. I've already seen like pre-order hype happening again, mm-hmm. as people start, you know, telling you that, oh, they've got 40 units or 100 units or whatever coming through. And so people are signing up for pre-orders. It almost feels like it's not even the pre-orders are guaranteed. It's one of those sign up to our mailing system, and if your name is drawn, then you, you know, basically get your chance to buy a ticket. You know,
pre-order lottery.
Yeah, 100%. It feels like a pre-order lottery. But the one thing I want to close off on this discussion is just some fun stories about how the community at large are fighting back against scalpers. You know, you think there's like whistleblowing and telling, you know, the distributors that this guy's selling products at double prices, whatever, but they're doing it in a far more meme-worthy internet style. And that is one story I heard, for example, is someone who arranged a deal with, you know, one of these scalpers to meet him at a certain point, and he got there and he got the pin and he walked in and he's like, hey, I'm here with the stuff, what's happening? But it looks like it's like a comedy show going on or something. He's like, yeah, it's open mic night, just go on stage and tell people you're trying to sell a console for 20,000 Rand because you clearly think you're funny. So that was I don't know if it's urban legend, but definitely one of the better fight back kind of clap back stories I've seen on scalpers.
Yeah, if anyone's interested, and on Reddit, you can go to r/scamthescalpers. There are a lot of really amusing stories, screenshots of people's conversations trying to set up and juke these scalpers. And there's one that I really enjoyed where this guy got two scalpers to meet up. He spoke to them individually and both told them to like meet at the same spot.
Wear a red rose, and so I know it's you.
Yeah. So then, but he'll also do stuff like he gets there, be like, oh, so it's the wrong robot. No, it's in this car. No, so he really gives them the runaround.
Yeah.
And eventually they get to each other and like they're pissed off and angry because like they assume this oak's been wasting their time all afternoon when they're just trying to like sell a 25,000 Rand console.
Nice. And catfishing and then, the scalpers.
Exactly. And then they have a go at each other. It's pretty amusing. So I think like stories like that really kind of warm the heart, help you see the silver lining, you know, might take a bit of the weight off not feeling too broody and emo about like not being in the pre-order lottery.
That's fun. Cool. So, I mean, that's been our show for the day or for this week. If you've got any thoughts on scalping or scamming, or if you are one, give us some insights. We'd love to hear any stories that you have about kind of the whole scalping scenario. If you've got some great stories, please do share with them on our Twitter. We're at guru_podcast on Twitter. Otherwise, Tim is at Tim and a Fish, and I'm at The Gareth Woods. As always, it's been great chatting to you about another awesome topic in the world of gaming. We will certainly be back in a week or so with some more juicy topics to sink our teeth into. But until next time, go out there, have some fun, and go play some games.
Ooh, baby.